is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Blindsided, a reconceptualization of the role of emerging technologies in shaping information operations in the gray zone. Wonderful. By the FDD and a number of authors, one of whom is with me now, Varsha Kodavayar, who is going to help me understand this specialized language that is part of irregular warfare. Irregular warfare is all around us in the information age. Even information is now considered a weapon. So, Varsha, a very good evening to you. Congratulations to you and your colleagues. I name them Ashley Mathias, David Garstein Ross, yourself, and Cody Wilson. I begin, however, with some of the language that's in the title of this document. There's a lot of detail here. What, for example, is the gray zone? Where does it come from? Good evening to you, Varsha.
Good evening, John. Thank you so much for having me on your show today. And thank you so much for the nice words about the report as well. We're very proud that we've produced this report. And we also think it's a very timely contribution to the conversation around information operations and irregular warfare. So let me start with the question that you posed. What is the gray zone? The gray zone is thought of as the space between peace and competition. And gray zone is most often accompanied by the word activities. So you might hear the collocation gray zone activities a lot. We talk in the news sometimes about Russia's gray zone activities or China's gray zone activities or those of another adversarial state or non-state actors. Gray zone activities refers to the actions that fall short of open wartime conflict, but are still provocative in nature and are above the threshold of normal peacetime cooperation. And it's that continuum of the gray zone that defines the current threat environment globally today. And there are different terms for it. You might also hear irregular warfare or hybrid warfare or strategic competition, which is what the National Defense Strategy uses. But all of them refer to the same principle, which is this environment of provocation and competition that is adversarial or can be adversarial in nature, but it does not amount to the threshold of a full-out war.
If I understand correctly, we're talking about digital media, social media, and traditional media all being part of this gray zone contest. And they all have their uses together for something called a strategic narrative, which is being developed. What is that?
So a strategic narrative is the combination of all of these tools that you've mentioned. And the strategic narrative is really about this story. It's about the story that actors can create using these tools and can share. And I'm going to read a little bit from our report here because I want to make sure that we nail this issue of definitions correctly. And I highly encourage anybody listening to take a look at the report. It is chock full of a lot of new language, interesting language. But strategic narratives allow actors to create a shared meaning of the past, present, and future to influence behaviors both at home and abroad. And sometimes the strategic narrative, for example, could entail a shared cultural tradition or origin story. But at the end of the day, the strategic narrative is used antagonistically in the context of information operations and gray zone warfare. And it pulls together a very compelling story using misinformation, oversimplification, or even manipulated or intentionally false information. So misinformation, disinformation, the whole pool of it, to create this narrative that can be very compelling and can help advance influence goals.
Everything's in the example. Let us turn to history, recent history. Russia, now in kinetic combat in Ukraine, but in using the gray zone the years before, is notable for two organizations that I always was attracted to telling their story, Cozy Bear, especially, and Fancy Bear. Those were information operation experts. When they first emerged, this is during the 2016 campaign, was that new language to everyone? Is that the frontier right then, 2016?
That is an interesting question. I think it was the frontier in the sense we were realizing the damage that information operations are capable of doing to democratic systems and to the institutions that uphold the pillars of our democracy. And I'm really glad you mentioned Cozy Bear and Fancy Bear, because they are a prime example of what we call in our report the propagation mobilization framework. And our report offers a lot of incredible new terminology, but I think that the really big value out of this report is to put forth this propagation mobilization framework. And what this framework asserts is that there are two lines of effort when within an information operation. So there's propagation of information, sharing information, getting it out there. And then there's mobilization to action. And information operations can have one of two effects on propagation and mobilization. We, in our report, use the term positive and negative sometimes to refer to them. But the positive effect is amplification. And the negative effect is suppression. Now, I'll explain in just a second how brilliantly Cozy Bear and Fancy Bear exploited this. But propagation, an amplifying effect on propagation of information is exactly as it sounds. Spreading information through as many different media forums as you can, so it reaches as wide an audience as you can. Suppressing information is to take it out of circulation. Amplifying mobilization is trying to get a target population to go out there and do something, do a particular action, right? That whether that is protesting or refusing to abide by like a mask mandate, for example, our report is replete with different examples of that. And suppressive mobilization is the opposite, which is trying to get a population to not do something. And it's this latter aspect of mobilization that Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear really exploited. So if you look at the ads that the Internet Research Agency ran during this operation in 2016, it targeted both. It sought to suppress mobilization and amplify mobilization. And the way that it did that is by propagating a lot of mis and disinformation out there about candidates and about the election process. And it targeted different populations within the US, within American society. And it sought to both drive out, so mobilize people to go and vote, and also keep other populations of American society at home, so suppress mobilization to go and vote. And I recall some examples, the language of the ads itself escaped me, but there were some ads that were aired, for example, targeting the African-American community that I found in my research about the Cozy Bear, Fancy Bear operation. And these ads would say something to the extent of how there's actually no difference between Trump or Hillary, so it's better for African Americans if they just stay at home and don't go to vote at all. That is a clear example of suppressive mobilization.
Quickly, Chinese charm. All information operations are not negative. This was extremely positive and resonates today. How did they do it? We have a couple of minutes.
Charm campaigns are ones where the actor is attempting to charm people by spreading positive coverage about themselves as much as possible. I'll share one quick example of it. China has a huge state-run media apparatus, right? They've got many different TV channels. They've got many different publications. All of these work together so that it can propagate a positive message of Chinese opinion and influence public opinion abroad. They produce news reports that paint China in a positive light. They talk about the investments that China is doing in different countries around the world. They talk about the cultural strength, the history, and the traditions of China. And sometimes charm campaigns can even happen by playing up damage that could happen in your country or in your home state if something bad happens to China. So one example of that was an advertisement that the China Daily ran in 2018 in the Des Moines Register to say to Iowans, hey, the trade war is going to hurt Iowan farmers in this way. That's an example of charm campaigns, which the PRC, People's Republic of China, has tactically used.
The Iranians also practice information operations routinely, and they have a variety of tools. But we're looking at three bad actors, adversaries, who are using the gray zone to their advantage. Was NATO, was the U.S., was Europe slow to this, or do we have comparable comparable operations that we're just not talking about now? For example, we maintain that our melodramas travel around the world. Are those considered in traditional media, social media, and digital media to be charm offensives? It seems that they just produce them to make money, but are they also understood to be positive for the U.S.?
Very interesting question. And you're making me think of one of a show that I used to love a lot. It's called Magnificent Century, and it's a Turkish TV show, which a lot of people, a lot of analysts have said it's neo-Ottomanism. It's an example of this melodrama that spread far and wide. I began watching this show when I was living in Morocco in 2014. And I would say that it was an information operation from Turkey. It was an attempt to make the history of Turkey and the Ottoman Empire look glorified, as it says even in the title, Magnificent Century. In response to your question about is the U.S., NATO, is Europe slow to act, it's a difference in the way that our societies are structured. We have rules and laws and norms that constrain us from being as nimble within the information warfare space than our adversaries do. And this is both a good and a bad thing, right? Ultimately, having a well-functioning society based on law and order has been what's made us so strong. It's also the thing that currently prevents us from taking a more active and assertive vociferous approach to countering mis and disinformation that our adversaries put out there. So it's a double-edged sword.
What can go wrong and why? We're going to turn to that next. I'm speaking with Varsha Kotavayar, working for Valence Global, but at the same time participating in a new report about information operations, what used to be called the PR for this or that operation. Now in the hands of bad actors, is extremely effective, both causing violence and undermining the credibility of democracy. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Hunter.